auction number 27258, Mr. Len Stockhill, reel 3. Now, we were talking about, well, the lead-up into the war. Now, that was August, I presume, your summer camp at time.
August, the summer camp, and it was in the first 2 weeks.
So what happened? I mean,
so I came back from the territorial camp and went back to work. And as I started to say earlier on, I was working in the slaughterhouse when my boss, Bob Earfield, came through to the slaughterhouse and said, Len, he said, they're calling your lads up, your mob up. That was his exact word. They're calling your mob up. He said, you better get home. When my kit bag was still in the hall from coming back from camp. So, anyway, I gets myself ready. I was waiting for my papers coming, and they didn't come. I picked them up when I got them down to the armoury. And it was while I was down at the armoury, waiting to debus, to end bus, I should say. We were waiting for the buses coming, because nobody knew where we were going. Could have been anywhere. And then my future wife called down to see me outside the armoury. And I was talking to her until I got my papers, and then the buses came in. And about 10 o'clock at night, we got on the buses and away we went.
Now, what date's this?
This was the 23rd of August.
And where were you going? You didn't know, but...
No, we went to Youth Battery.
So not far?
Not far. And 187 went to Southgare, which was the batteries we were training on.
Now, were there any other troops, or was your battery taking over Hough Battery?
No, there was only a couple of maintenance men, and two of them went and one stopped, and there was a chap called Hall, H-A-L-L. He was the regular serviceman on the site, and then he eventually blended into the battery. But the thing was, there was already a Hall on our battery, so the regular one, he was called Hall 08, which was the last two numbers of his army number, and that was how they differentiated between the Hall that was in the TA and him. Well,
so he was a regular maintenance man.
Yes, he was a regular maintenance man.
Were they called artificers or not? Then?
Well, no, he was just a gunner. The artificers were NCO rank and up over. Chiffies, we used to call them. And they had their own workshop. Where he worked in the gun room, where all the spanners and spare ramrods were and everything like that. All the spare stuff. And the locks for the breech was
now
kept.
Where were you moving into when you went to Hough Bay?
Well, again, we only had this one place to sleep on that night. And we slept anywhere, standing up, some of them, because we were limited to the space that we had.
Just this place for 30 gunners?
Yeah. And they got 250 men in there. And eventually, they must have done it very quickly, they procured houses on Moor Terrace. And we went sort of put into them.
Now, what were these billets like?
These were private houses, and there were so many to a room.
Were the civilians still in there, or were
No, they moved them all out, got them into other houses, and we took these houses over. And there was from the Rovers Club to the end one in Moor Terrace.
And what were they like? How comfortable were they as billets?
They were quite comfortable, because we only had palliasses to sleep on.
Now, what type of palliass? Is this a straw stuff?
Straw palliass, and then we got beds with a canvas, just a canvas, and we just laid a blanket on them. There was no mattress on them. There was just a canvas swung in between a wooden frame, We had those until we went into the Utmans. But at the beginning, there was palliasses, the same we had up in the camp at Kinghorn.
Now, one thing we haven't asked them much about is the food. What was the food like when you started in the army proper?
Well, initially, we had more meat to eat than what we could eat. The allowance of meat was so great that there was too much. And I know this for a fact was, at the beginning, they said to me, "You're a butcher, can you go and get some organised?" And you had so much to spend, like. So I go out into the local butchers and tell them what we wanted and get it sent up to the battery. And I had a butcher's shop in the battery below the bar and stroud and rangefinder. It wasn't very big, but I was able to cut stuff up there ready for the cookhouse. But as I say, the meat allowance was so great that you couldn't eat it all. Of course, that changed over the years, of course.
And you were just cutting it up. Did you stay doing that job? That was just an extra job?
No, that was a job that I had. I had that picked that job up when I was at Tynemouth. They found out that I was a butcher at Tynemouth.
So it was just an informal extra?
Yes, and I wasn't happy with it because I used to watch the others going on gun drill and I wasn't. And so I came off it and they started to get the supplies in from Scorton, which was the RA Service Corps depot. And of course the meat came in all prepared.
Now tell me about the equipment you had at Huffback. So what was all the equipment that was there? So firstly the 6-inch guns.
There was two 6-inch guns. One was on lighthouse battery, which was about 100 yards between the Huff battery gun. There was space to about 100 yards.
But it was part of the Huff battery?
Yes, it was all classed as the Huff battery. But we, for want of calling, we used to call that lighthouse battery and Huff battery. But it was all Huff battery, you know, it was all the Huff battery. But to give it a name, it was lighthouse battery.
And what were these guns like? Were they just as you'd expected?
Were the ones that we were used to, and there were 6-inch guns. There had been three guns there, but one that it was next to the BOP, the battery observation post. The vibration was shaking the foundations of the battery observation post and upsetting the rangefinder. So they took that out, and in that place, they put a Lewis gun, anti-aircraft, for anti-aircraft purposes. And that was manned for 24 hours.
Did you have a go on the Lewis gun?
Yes, I had a turn on it, yeah.
Now, what did you think of the Lewis gun?
It was quite good. Very big arc of fire, a large arc of fire. Bit awkward as regards the pans, putting the pans on. And as regards the using it for anti-aircraft, a single pan was no good. He's wanted a double pan. That's right. It's two rows, lines of rounds in it.
Did you get much chance to practice fire on the Lewis gun?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I about this time, when I'd finished with the butchering, I volunteered for various courses. And one of them was a small arms course.
Now tell me about the small arms course.
Well, I went to Catterick Camp and they gave me a stripe to go with. Didn't promote me, they just gave me a stripe to go with so that I was an NCO.
Now what do you remember of the course at Catterick?
Well, we were at Piav, on Piav lines in Catterick. Catterick is a big sprawling military base. Made up of different lines. There was Hooge lines, Piav lines, and this one that I was on, the small arms. And we did nearly all, some of the small arms that I'd never ever seen before.
So what? Tell us about it.
Well, for one thing, the first time I ever seen a Bren gun. And of course, the Bren gun was with ever so many, there was stands, it had a stand for fixed fire, And it also, the same stand could be reorganised and made into an anti-aircraft stand. So the gun was up here. But I never ever saw that anymore. We're coming back, the battery, all I saw was the Bren.
The Lewis, you mean?
No, the Bren gun.
You didn't see the stand then?
The stand was for the Bren gun. It was what I said was, it was the first time I'd ever seen a Bren gun.
Yeah, but you said you never saw it when you got back to the battery.
Oh, yes, 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 we got them.
You got them, right.
We got them. And not as soon as I got back, but we eventually got them.
Now, what did you think of the Bren gun?
Well, it was overrated, I thought. Very, very accurate. And the rate of fire was very good. I mean, it could chew its way through a 9-inch brick wall in no time at all.
So why was it overrated then?
One of the things that I was overheating. It could only fire so many rounds. And the battle became overheated and you've got to change the battle. Now this could be a bit awkward, you know, changing a red hot battle onto another one. It was possible and it used to be done. But as regards the accuracy, you couldn't fault it because it was had a very small cone of fire, very, very small cone, where the Lewis gun had a large cone of fire.
Now, what other weapons did you do at Kettering?
Well, the Browning automatic rifle, which was quite big.
I've not heard of that one. Tell us about that one.
Well, that was like a big version of the Enfield rifle, 303. Well, it was a 5.5 something bullet, very big bullet, and it was mainly on anti-tank. And then there was that was issued generally to the Home Guard at that time. Because when I had the Home Guard, it was one used to call at our guard room quite regular on one of their points, stopping off points, and they used to have a Browning automatic rifle.
Was it Browning or Boys?
Browning. The Boys was an anti-tank rifle.
Oh, that's fine. You obviously got the row. What else did you have then? What else were you learning about?
Well, I learned on the Thompson submachine gun.
What do you think of that?
Well, that was all right. It was very, very, very romantic. It's about all you could say for it.
Now, why? What was this allure?
Well, you got the Tommy gun in your hand and you thought you were a gangster. You know.
From the movies.
From the movies, yeah. And of course, we didn't have them long when the British Army brought out the Sten gun.
Now, did you do the Sten gun on this course at Kettering?
I did the Sten gun on the course at Kettering.
Now, what did you think of the Sten gun?
And the Sten gun was good. It was liable to break down quite a lot. So you give it a good shake and it would fire again. It was all right for what it was, you know. It was
what do you mean? What was it good for? What was it bad for?
Well, it was handy. It was lightweight. Sometimes you had to knock the cobs. When it first came out, you had to knock the cobs of weld off them. They were so rough. But they made up for that with the... they were fairly accurate at short range, which was a short range weapon. For hand-to-hand fighting, they were ideal. They got better as the years went on. And they were used extensively for house-to-house fighting in the infantry.
Now, any other weapons?
The Blacker Bombard.
Now, what was that? I've heard
the Blacker Bombard was an anti-tank weapon. It was a spigot mortar, and it was very, very simple.
How did it work?
Well, there was a bomb at the front, egg-shaped bomb, on a long shaft with had vanes on it. Now, this went down a spigot in the Black of Bombay, and there was a slight shield with a garden rake sight on the side, and you looked along and you could aim off. If there was a tank that was moving, you could aim off and fire the Black of Bomb. You pulled the trigger, it exploded a charge, and it sent this bomb flying out. But it was a thing that you got to lay down to do. And they were mounted on a concrete pillar, which had a big stud, and it all rested on. And they were on the battery, they were placed at strategic points round the battery. We had one in the Rovers Field, and we had one just on the town moor.
Were they a good weapon, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they were that good. They were effective at close quarters, but if the tank got so close, you didn't stand a lot of chance. But they were, you know, I think they answered a purpose at the beginning when they were first brought out, and they didn't last long.
What else?
Because the 38 revolver.
Now, what do you think of that? What is that? The Webley.
Webley, yeah. No, Webley was the
45. Sorry,
It was the what was it that? Oh, I forget the name of it. But the 38. Well, they were first issued the Webley 45 when I was in the TA to the officers, and then just after we were called up, they were issued with the 38.
Now, what was this revolver like?
Revolver was all right. It was fairly accurate.
At short range?
I only used them when I was on this course. I never used them. Officers carried them, but not us.
Now, this weapons course was in the early days then?
Yes.
Was it? And what happened when you went back to the battery?
Well, I was given the job of instructing the... I got promoted at Lance Bombardier proper. And I got the job of instructing with these different weapons that we'd got. Not all the weapons I'd been trained on, but on the weapons that we'd got, which was the Black of Bombard, the Thompson submachine gun. We hadn't got the Sten then. And the Bren gun. We got the Bren gun eventually. And the Lewis gun.
Did you enjoy that job as weapons instructor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like any job like that.
Were the men keen?
Oh, yes, yes, they were very keen. And shortly after that, after I finished that job, I went on a PTI course.
I'll come back to that. Oh. Can I just ask a bit more about the battery?
Yeah.
What other equipment? We've talked about the guns, but what about the what other equipment was there?
As regards weaponry?
Or any other equipment for the guns, you know?
Well, there was the dummy loader for one thing. Then there was the Lewis gun, which is for anti-aircraft protection on the battery.
Now, you mentioned the Barr and Stroud. Were you trained on that?
No. That was a rangefinder's job. That was a different branch altogether.
So who would do that?
That was specialists that would go into there, and they'd use the Barr and Stroud for rangefinding. And then they'd pass that information electronically down to the guns.
But that wasn't your... Could you have volunteered for that, or were you interested?
I could have done eventually, but I was a gunman. I felt that I wanted to be on the guns.
Now, what was your role when you were on the guns? Did you actually have any time on the guns, or were you always butchering and then
instructing? No, I wasn't butchering long. I was fed up with butchering, and I got onto the guns as soon as I could.
And what was your role on the guns?
Well, at first up, I started off as a breech man on number two on the breech.
Now, can you tell me what each man in the gun team does? What was everybody's
job? Well, there
was
three and five, and six and seven were loaders. You got them loading in the turns, you see. And
so three and five, six and seven.
Three would load his shell. Five would pass him the two charges of ammunition. After seven and eight had rammed it in. And then number three would step out, and number five would come in, load his shell after the gun had fired. And the other number, six, would pass him the charges. Number two would close the breach and said, shout ready.
So number one, that what was number one?
Number one, he was in charge of the gun, just on for the general running of the gun.
Would he be a sergeant then?
Sergeant of Bombardier.
And then the number two was the
breech loader.
And that was his job to...
Just loading the breech. Opening and shutting the breech.
So that's number two. So four?
Four was on the ram. And seven.
So which was... What number was the layer?
Well, they're called gun layers. We didn't have numbers. There was a traversing layer and the elevation layer.
So there's two of them. So how many in the team in all? Ten?
Ten. About ten, yes. 10 or 11.
Now, what was a typical day like when you were a gunner on the gun in those early days, say 1939-40?
Right, then we would fall in for detailed off on a morning. There was the previous day on the notice board, there was the sentry guards for the gate guard, and the gun crews would be posted on the board. So you knew which gun crew you were on, either lighthouse or youth. And there would all be the Lance Sergeant, Jones, Tate, and then all the gun crews, all the numbers. The next morning, you would fall in on a general parade, and the gun crews would be numbered off and fall to one side. Then they would be dismissed to their guns. The rest of the parade, they would go off to their various duties.
Now, so we'll take the two things. What if you were sent to on the guns? What would a typical day be?
Right, then you would be dismissed from the parade ground and to go down to your respective guns. First thing you'd check the ready-use lockers.
The ready-use
lockers. Make sure you could open and shut them and that they were full. Then you went onto the gun platform and the breech number two checked his breech, make sure that was free and moving and closing all right. The seven and eight would look at their bucket, make sure the bucket was filled with water and the ramrod was in there. And then would begin the work, dating them on the gun. Now, whatever I told you before about the
datum card.
The elevation, and going through the datum. Right. Now, on top of that, you've got what they call a clinometer. And this was set, and you've got to work out the rise and fall of the tide and the... at any particular point, you see. That information was put onto this clinometer, and there was a flat plane above the breech of the gun. This was placed onto that flat, the clino was placed onto that, and if the bubble was central, you knew your gun was lined up. But of course, before this, your guns were lined up on the datum board. Now then,
so what else?
If everything was all right, then the clino was put back in its box, and they just had the general clean down, and then they were stood down. Now they would go into what they call the gun shelter, and there was various jobs that the NCO in charge of the gun wanted them to do. They used to send them to do it, but there was always somebody left on the platform to keep watch.
So there was a guard, basically a sentry.
More or less a guard, and yeah. Didn't have a rifle or anything, but
did he have a binoculars?
Call him lookout.
So what would he do? What would he have a binoculars or something?
Well, he would be there in case there was any information come down to from the battery observation post by telephone. And so if he got there was no sort of klaxon alarm or anything like that, he would get a phone call from the battery observation post to man the gun. And he would call out down to the number one.
So he wasn't looking himself to see anything?
Oh, no. Well,
that was done by the lookout?
Yeah, it could be foggy, could be anything. And at that time, there was no radar.
So he just stood there, basically?
He just stood there, made sure that nobody interfered with the gun.
So what were you doing back in the gun shelter if you
Well, you were either doing a lecture. I used to, that was one of the things I used to do. I used to have the gun crew and give them a lecture.
Now what on?
On the brain gun, let them take it to bits and put it back together again, and things like that. Or give them a lecture on ammunitions, what it was, the cordite for the charges and lidite in the shells, and tell them all about the shells and about the all about the ammunition, which I had previously learnt.
So what else might you be doing in the gun shelter?
Well, if it was getting towards night time, nothing, we used to play cards. And one of our favourites was somebody had got one of these, what do they call them? Where you buy and sell houses.
Monopoly.
Monopoly. And we used to play a Monopoly quite a lot. Yeah.
And you'd be on all night as well?
You went on at 8 o'clock in the morning, you come off at 8 o'clock the next morning.
Now, wasn't there any gun maintenance? You said you did all the checks, but what about gun maintenance?
Well, what the artificer, the gun artificer, he would come round and he would go through the gun, check it all, and he had two assistants, two land sergeants, and they would go around and check the gun, make sure the gun was all right. All we had to do was to make sure it was kept clean.
So how would you clean it?
Well, and we used to have a certain type of oil to make sure all moving parts were lightly greased and all metal, bare metal parts were oiled.
What about cleaning inside the rifle? You know, that...
Well, you'd got a pull-through.
Like a rifle's pull-through?
Like a rifle pull-through, on a lot larger. And with a 6-inch black brush. And you just pulled it through once or twice. And you had to, what you did, you pulled it from the muzzle to the breech, because you could elevate it, put your weight in the top, and it would slide down the barrel. And then you put your brush in at the muzzle end, and then pull it through to clean the bore out.
So that's pretty well it for the day. That's what you'd be doing?
Yes.
If you're on the gun?
If you're on the gun.